flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Friday, let's get into some football talk here, BT. I know we've been sprinkling in Pete Carroll as he agrees to a deal to become the Raiders' next head coach. I wish it was the Jets. It was not. That's why I can't love the Aaron Glenn hire. But a lot of people are in love with the Aaron Glenn hire. You yourself love it. And I can get behind, like, I like his passion, his characteristics. It just feels to me very similar to when Robert Saleh was hired. So I did a quick Google search last night.
The Google.
Yeah, the old Google.
Mm-hmm.
Jets hire Robert Saleh, whatever it may be. And you know what comes up? Because, like, the stuff that's coming out now about Glenn is he's the culture changer, leader of men, passionate, former players and coaches love him. Quick little Google search. I'm going to read you a couple of the things. Just a little cursory search. Yeah. New York Times. Convinced by his passion and plan, the Jets hire Robert Saleh. I'm just going to give you the headlines, not the whole thing.
I got you.
New York Post. Robert Saleh, the anti-Adam Gase, will be leader for the Jets. Bleacher Report. Richard Sherman, former player for Robert Saleh, praises Jets hire of Robert Saleh. Sports Business Journal. Jets general manager Joe Douglas nailed the coaching hire with 49ers Robert Saleh. Sherman, quote on his tweet, Richard Sherman, the Jets got a great one. Congrats to them. He's going to change the culture, blah, 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 blah. So I don't need to go into collaborative leader. Christopher Johnson called Saleh a collaborative leader, a proven track record in the NFL. Saleh is known for being a passionate, player-friendly coach. He gives honest criticism, but not using negative language. Blah, doesn't yell, blah, 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 blah.
Doesn't yell, right?
Okay.
That's important. Doesn't yell. You know, there's more. Doesn't hold guys accountable. Keep going.
Sherman says, as a former 49er player, Saleh is able to rally men and turn around the culture.
Didn't do it. You know what I'm hearing? I'm hearing Sherman being wrong a lot is what I'm hearing.
Well, it was Richard Sherman basically saying it was
former. I know. Sherman didn't nail anything. He was wrong.
What I'm hearing and reading is the same exact stuff. And I'm trying to take away your enthusiasm, and it doesn't mean that Glenn can't be successful.
Of course not.
What it means is the Jets are going down the same road. They're getting praised by many for this hire. It's like what's Parcells going to come out and say, Aaron Glenn, he can't coach worth a, you know what? He's not going to say that. What are former players going to say? Oh, Aaron Glenn isn't the guy. This is a horrible hire. No, they're all going to say the same thing that they said about Robert Saleh. And the same thing that a lot of people said, oh, he's a culture changer, a leader. Look at the presence. He's in shape. They said the same thing about Robert Saleh that they're saying about Glenn. Does it mean that the result's going to be the same? No, but just beware that this is the same feel we had 4 years ago.
My eyes are wide open. All right, and I remember Sherman saying that stuff, and I'm not going to lie to you, when I saw Sherman weigh in with that a couple of years ago, that was even me, and I wanted Saleh to be hired by the Jets, and I was dead wrong, but that was a little more reinforcement, like, all right, they got this right. Sherman's a champion. Sherman's a straight shooter. Sherman knows the locker room. All right, here we go, and it didn't work out, but you see, Sherman wasn't totally wrong. He was actually right. When Sherman said that they got a great one, they did. They got a great defensive coordinator who couldn't transition to being a head coach.
Right.
And that, I think, is going to be the biggest difference.
And that may be the case. It may not be the case with Aaron Glenn. But again, we're in the great unknown. As opposed to getting a guy who, I don't know, you knew he was a good coach. Because there was some track record. I hate even talking about this in this manner. Because I don't want to make it sound like I don't like Aaron Glenn or believe in Aaron Glenn. I disagree with the Jets' philosophy in this hiring process based on their wrongs for many, many years. I hope that Aaron Glenn proves to be the exception and not the rule for what the Jets have done here. I do, like, at my core, like what I'm hearing from him. I just don't believe their setup is going to lead to success.
Listen, I think you've done a good job of straddling the fence, of being clear about what worries you, but also being very clear that you want Aaron Glenn to do real well, and there's parts of the hire that you like.
Yeah.
I get it. I was doing this on the podcast last night. It's up there if you guys want to check it out, Unkillable. And I did about 40 minutes. One of the things that I hit, and I remember saying this to you as well, where we thought Saleh was one thing, and then when we saw him on Hard Knocks, we really got a different, different presentation. And I don't know why it bothered me then, but my instincts were right. And I keep going back to when Rodgers, it was just a basic throw in camp. Now, I'm sure it threaded the needle, obviously, but and it had some real zip on it. But the head coach of an NFL team, and go back and find it. Sal was like, oh, God. Oh my God. What a throw. Oh. Like, that's something I would say to my son sitting on the sideline at Jets camp. Like, dude, can you imagine throwing one like that? Can you imagine throwing a pass like that in 10 years, like being that good? Did you see that throw? Not a guy who's been in the NFL for the last 12 years in a various capacity. So I think and it remains to be seen, I think the biggest difference between Sala and Glenn is that Glenn's presentation is authentic.
And by the way, I just went with Sala because that was the last time, like, everybody, you know, it was the last time they made a hire and people were excited. I think the better comparison is Bowles, because Bowles, while he had a different personality than Glenn, maybe as far as the outwardness goes, I think Bowles and Glenn have similar principles. But remember, Bowles is a Parcells disciple as well. I think they have similar principles. Maybe they have different ways of delivering their message. But Bowles was proven to be a good coach. He just didn't have success here. And maybe that's going to be the case with Aaron Glenn again. I hope that that's not the case, but I do think he's going to be better than Robert Saleh. How could you not? Like, Saleh was almost as bad as it gets for all the reasons that you just mentioned. I felt like his biggest detriment was he was just too nice. I don't think Glenn's going to be that, but it still doesn't mean that he's going to have success with their infrastructure.
I look at Saleh, and it's no longer about him, but the things that could change quickly and starkly under Aaron Glenn. Think about how very rarely the Jets got off to quick starts. Like, they'd start games, and you look up, and it's, you know, early second quarter, and they got, you know, they've had the ball twice, and they possess it for 4 minutes and done three and outs. Like, they just never scored first. So slow starts, a lack of discipline, which clearly was about penalties, and an inability to finish games. You know, you check those boxes, you're a 10-11 team right away, a 10-win team right away next year with this talent, if he's the guy.
BT and Sal on the Fan. Jeff is in Merrick wanting to talk about Aaron Glenn. What's up, Jeff?
Hey, BT, Sal, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. Right, what's up, Jeff?
All right. I think Aaron Glenn is going to be a great head coach. I originally wanted Cliff Kingsbury, an offensive mind who had been coached before. However, Glenn played here. I think he's like the first coach that the Jets hired who was actually a player since, like, Sammy Baugh and Bulldog Turner from when they were the New York Titans. But I think things are going to come full circle, and here's what I'm talking about. VT, you mentioned with the hire of Pete Carroll, the fake spike game. We all know that Aaron Glenn, who was a rookie, was the one that Dan Marino, you know.
Yeah,
you
he
know,
played.
And then, but I believe James Hasty, if he had thrown to him, he would have been duped too. Now, Glenn stayed with the Jets for 8 years, you know, saw the coat tight and then the Parcells resurrection and everything. I've been saying that this team's fake spike was in 2022, the punt return walk-off against the Patriots when Zach Wilson said the wrong game, and then it's like, we need a new quarterback. You know, they lost the Mike White shirt, the Strebler, the Rodgers. That's what made us into this. So, as an optimistic Jets fan, what would, how good would it be for, after 2 years of this, that the guy who was, you know, torched on the fake spike
is the one to bring it back home and change it? I mean, maybe, Joe. I mean, pardon me, Jeff. Maybe, Jeff, that's certainly the hope. Now, listen, the other thing, too, and this is just all conjecture in terms of what we think he's going to do on the job, but what I'm about to say is also a matter of record, a matter of fact, and it's very appealing to me. Like, all right, now there's a lot of good coaches who never played, but I like, if you're going to go the former player route like Aaron, all right, I like the fact that he was in the middle of one of the most amazing transformations in NFL history from Kotite to Parcells. He saw it. And he was a big part of it as a great player. Great, he was great for a couple years, Aaron, as you know. I like the fact that he was in the building with Sean Payton. You know, I like the fact that he worked his way up, beginning as a scout, didn't take any shortcuts. You know, each like incremental progress. I mean, there's no guarantee that he's ready for the job, but I think he's as ready as he could possibly be for the job. I'll put it that way.
There are no guarantees in anything. Even Pete Carroll or Mike McCarthy, guys who have won the Super Bowl before, there are no guarantees in that either, the way I would say it. And all those things you just laid out about Aaron Glenn, I like that too. And it doesn't mean because the other guys before him, the first-time head coaches, didn't work. It doesn't mean that he won't. I just felt like you. I don't think you could argue who's a better head coach right now. Pete Carroll, Mike McCarthy, Aaron Glenn. Like, no. Obviously, the guys with experience who have won at the highest level, you know, winning the Super Bowl, they would be better. It doesn't mean that they would be in year two or three or four or better for this situation. But I thought specific to this situation. As a matter of fact, I would argue that the Jets were a better situation for Pete Carroll, and Aaron Glenn would be better with the Raiders. The Jets roster now is better than the Raiders, at least in my opinion. I think the Jets can win now. Win a Super Bowl? No, but get to the playoffs? Yeah, I think they can get to the playoffs with the right head coach in place. So I'd rather have Pete Carroll establishing that foundation, getting to the postseason with this roster over the next year or two,
yeah,
specifically with Aaron Rodgers. Doesn't mean that Glenn can't do it, but right now, I'd rather that. If I were a younger team that was going to be, you know, 4 or 5 years down the road, then maybe I'd be more inclined to go with Aaron Glenn. Maybe. But if you want to change the culture and you really need a good football coach to do so, and I thought this team.
So it's a new year, 2025, and you're thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How am I going to build something for myself? But where do I start? Shopify is how you're going to make it happen, and here's how. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. The best time to start your new business is right now. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates, no coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to start selling with Shopify today. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Team this year, this Jets team screamed, we need a good head coach. That's why I would have gone with the veteran.
Yeah, I get that, too. I don't know if you saw this yesterday. Keyshawn, I don't know, even know what show he's on.
I love
Keyshawn.
Reason I, really
know, I do, too. The only reason I know the show is what's going on.
He's on Joy Taylor.
Around the show, yeah.
He's on Joy Taylor's show.
That show, yes. Yeah, that show. he said that he almost basically guarantees Aaron Glenn does not want Rodgers back. And they're boys. Like, they play together. I did see that yesterday, right? So,
ooh.
I would say that, and I'll take Keyshawn at his word that he certainly has some inside knowledge. He's buddies with Aaron, played with him. But I think that's dumb by Aaron Glenn. And I don't think that will actually happen. I think if Aaron's leaning that way now, I think he's going to have a reversal of heart, because I think the worst thing that Aaron Glenn could do is to start next year, and I said this to you, without Aaron Rodgers, and there's nobody, Sam Darnold's not coming back, so nobody's going to be good. So you're going to go 4-13 or 5-12. You're going to get your face kicked in. You're going to be uncompetitive for the most part from an offensive perspective. And then you come back in year two with zero equity. You absorb double-digit losses in year one, and now you've got to start over with a quarterback, assuming you take one in the draft at some point, and you're probably going to lose again early in year two. I'm looking to avoid that if I'm Aaron Glenn. Not at sacrificing the big picture and not to take a shortcut, but I think the circumstances are so unique here that you can actually do both. You bring back Rodgers, you're in the playoff hunt, you win 9 games, maybe 10, maybe you get in. Jet fans are pacified for a year. And then when Rodgers retires, probably after next year, if he even plays next year, now you go to a different route, a younger quarterback, and Jet fans can say, all right, this will take a little bit of a step back. It's going to take a little time, but we saw him win, and we believe in him enough where if he's 4-13 in year one and year two gets off to a rough start, the Jet fans are going to go nuts.
I don't know this, but I'm just trying to use common sense in deciphering what went on here. I believe, to your point, Glenn and Keyshawn are close. I do not believe that in this moment Glenn texted Keyshawn.
I agree with that.
Any inkling about what he's going to do with the quarterback. And Keyshawn's read is that he knows Glenn's personality, and Keyshawn thinks he knows Rodgers' personality. So maybe Keyshawn is somebody who looks at Rodgers in a negative light.
100%. Right. I think he's unfair to him, okay. Actually. I think Keyshawn's incredibly unfair to him.
Okay.
Unfair.
So there you go. So now him thinking Rodgers is one thing, and knowing what Glenn is,
yeah,
he's saying there's, I would almost guarantee my boy Glenn, who operates this way, wouldn't want a guy who I think operates that way.
That's actually a really good read. That's a very good read.
Without,
that could be it.
Without knowing,
for sure, what Aaron's thinking.
Well, and maybe Aaron Glenn hasn't met with Rodgers yet, and maybe Rodgers isn't what Keyshawn thinks he is.
Uh-huh. No, Sal, I think that's probably one of the smarter projections that you made. I think that that's really interesting. I think that that's probably right. Now, I'll just give you another thing to ingest here. Maybe. I'm sure that Keyshawn called Aaron. Well, I think he'd call him if it's really a boy. Congratulate him on the job. And maybe you're talking, even though I know most people text these days, but yeah, I'm sure those two old school guys probably pick up the
phone. It's so easier, you know?
It is so much easier. But something like that, like a life-altering event, I pick up the phone, even if it's inconvenient for both of us, I'm going to pick up the phone. So I think Keyshawn probably picked up the phone, and he may have been like, hey, congrats. All right, man, listen, you go fix your old team. It's going to be tough, but hey, look, yeah, you don't want to really mess around with that Rodgers cat, do you? And maybe Aaron's like, hey. And so maybe Keyshawn was almost talking for Aaron based on what you said, what he thinks Aaron's thinking, and maybe Aaron didn't give him any inkling what he's actually thinking.
Well, let's get back to the phones here. Mike is in Massapequa. What's up, Mike?
Michael!
Hey, what's up, man? What's happening?
What's up, Mike?
Hey, bud.
I just want to talk about the Jets. I mean, we've gone down this road with the defensive coordinator how many times now? First-time head coach. Now we got a new GM. I mean, when's our trillion-dollar business owner going to realize we have to do something different before we're going to succeed in this league?
Well, I hope it's now. Now, it's not as different, evidently, as you and some others want, but I think that the next moves, you know, again, I do prefer GM with some experience. I truly do. But I also think here, and I saw this, Mike, I said this yesterday on the show here and on the pod last night. Hey, everybody thinks there's so many good GMs out there. If they were so good, they'd be employed. I mean, people, like, we talk of these generalities, and I understand why, because we've watched for a decade of the Jets try the same thing, and it never works. So I understand the pushback. Hire a GM who's had success. Who is that? That's currently not on somebody's payroll. I don't know anybody. I really don't. So I think what's more important, and where I hope Woody really changes, is that there is an insistence on, all right, if we're going rookie coach, rookie GM, one of your DCs has to be a former head coach, something that Robert Saleh didn't have.
Yeah.
Things like that. Maybe that's where Woody changes.
And by the way, I also think, a call brought Cliff Kingsbury up before, like, I also think if you were going to go first-timer, I'd rather have gone offensive guy. And if not, then hire an experienced offensive coordinator. Doesn't seem like that's going to be the case. So as long as where you and I could come to an agreement here where I think it might work is if you hire an experienced general manager, and there are those guys out there, you can say, well, who is it? Well, at least we know two of them, which means there's got to be more. Thomas Dimitroff, Telesco, as Eric and Clifton brought up yesterday from the Raiders. By the way, even Phil Savage, I don't love that idea.
He's going to stay in the building.
Well, I'm saying, like, at least he's got some experience in doing it. I just want somebody that's had experience in that and then surround your inexperienced head coach with an experienced cast. We've seen this before, and it works. Hire a veteran, proven offensive coordinator. Obviously, he's got to be in alignment with your thinking, what you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very important, especially when you have a first-time head coach, to surround him with the right pieces.
And the other thing, too, here is that, and I've said this a bunch, because this is all really, really important stuff, the Jets have a lot of tough decisions coming up with some contracts here. It's not like it's a complete rebuild, and you've got nobody on the roster, pretty much like when Gase came in and all the other coaches. And it's young, relatively unappealing, untalented players relative to the rest of the players in the NFL, not to us. And it's like, all right, you know, in a year, the roster is going to be flipped 70%. There's a lot of players on this team who could theoretically be here for a long time, but they've got to they've got to work around some big financial issues. One is Garrett Wilson, one is Sauce. And yeah, I do prefer a general manager that has some experience there cutting those deals or deciding exactly what they do, but apparently they're not going in that direction.
BT and Sal and the family got to get into championship weekend as well. There's a lot going on here. Something from last night, BT, I was at the Garden checking out the Ranger game.
Well, you are a Garden junkie these days.
Two nights in a row. Two dubs as well. It's been a fun two nights. So we'll get into that. There's something, though, that happened outside of the Ranger game that I want to get into with you, and it triggered a thought in my mind. Back on the fan. We'll continue with your calls here, talking Aaron Glenn, talking Pete Alonso, talking Pete Carroll. We'll get into championship weekend coming up in just a little bit. So a couple things here for you, BT. Last night, I was at the Garden again. My nephew and brother-in-law got tickets. So like, oh, we're going to go to the game. I was like, all right, well, you know what? I'm hanging out at SNY anyway all night. Let me see if I could go to the game in between. So I bought a ticket. Mm-hmm. Actually, went Mitchell and Fort Lee. And it's going right now. We found tickets. Dude, side note. Tickets to the Garden, absurd.
Yeah.
I luckily paid $135.
Where'd you sit?
In the 100s.
Well, God, nice.
Because I needed to be in the 100s because that's where my nephew and my brother-in-law got their free tickets, so I wanted to go see them.
Of course.
And if you don't have Section 100, I don't think they allow you in.
I know what you're saying. You can't navigate your way to them without 100.
So yeah, I just say, get us in the 100s. It actually wasn't bad season. I do it again for $135. But like, even $135 is expensive, and I think we were fortunate to pay $135. Anyway, side note. So I took the subway up with Todd Zeal after SNY. He happened to be going to the game as well.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that it was some kind of Mets night going on at the Garden, but it was, as it turned out. So I have a trivia question for you, and then it's going to lead me to something else that I wanted to talk to you
about. By the way, I will handle the trivia, hopefully. Yeah. So Franco was at the Garden the other night for the Johnnies. Was he at the Garden back-to-back a little Mets night?
He was.
He was like, all right, here we go.
And I didn't realize I took the subway with Franco home from the Garden
after St. John's game. Yeah.
And then I see him at the game last night sitting next to Zeal.
Okay.
So he was there like I was back-to-back. Okay. So the first question is, I'm going to tell you who was there.
Mm-hmm.
David Wright.
Okay. My favorite Met of all time besides Doc.
Todd Zeal.
Yep.
Johnny Franco.
Johnny.
And Matt Harvey.
Okay.
Okay, so now I'm going to give you multiple choice on who they showed on the big screen.
Okay.
Was it A, David Wright?
Go ahead.
Was it B, David Wright and Johnny Franco?
Okay.
Was it C, Harvey and Wright? Or D, all of the above?
Okay. Were they all sitting together?
Yes.
Okay, so it could have been a group shot, which would satisfy one of the questions here. I mean, David Wright's got to be in every single one. I would say you got David Wright and Matt Harvey.
Okay.
That's my guess.
David Wright was shown individually.
As he should be.
And then they showed Johnny.
Okay, I got no problem with that. Johnny's a New York guy.
I don't have a problem with that either.
Okay.
They didn't show Harvey or Todd Zeal.
I mean,
like you can't do. I'm fine with doing Wright separately.
Yep.
You can't. You wouldn't show the others at least.
I know you know Todd, and I like him on TV. But in terms of like a Met player, I mean, Todd Zeal's last, so I don't need to see Todd Zeal. It's not even going to see Todd Zeal on the what an amazing player! Guy is unbelievable.
He played in the 2000 World Series.
Tebow Perez, they're going to put him up.
Tebow Perez ended up screwing Todd. As it turns out.
That's why I said.
Or you couldn't do a group of Mets. Like,
you could have done a group.
Night.
You could have done a
David
group.
David Wright, fine. Yeah. Franco was on the 2000 Mets. Todd Zeal was on the 2000 Mets.
Yeah.
And Matt Harvey was obviously a 2015 like World Series, I don't want to say World Series hero, but he was a hero that year.
Refusing to come out of the game and a great season and a fan favorite.
Like Zeal's on there behind David Wright, and David Wright goes to like put his hand up to wave. He covers up Zeal's face. I'm like, that's Todd Zeal.
Did they put the names up? How did you know Zeal was there? Because you rode the train with him.
Yeah, so
if you go to the Rangers game.
You would not know Zeal was there.
Would you have known
night?
Matt Harvey was there?
No.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, listen, you could have given them all of them a little pop here, but to me, the pecking order would be David Wright,
and you said
Johnny
Harvey.
Franco.
You did say Harvey though, like Harvey's, you know.
I know, but I didn't say who I would show.
Right, okay.
I would have put Johnny over Matt Harvey.
Okay,
for me, Wright, Franco, Harvey, Zeal.
Okay,
that's
fine.
The order for me.
So anyway, they showed Wright first, big ovation, showed Johnny Franco, and that's how I knew he was in the building. And I go, you're here again too? And they were texting a little bit, and he's like, yeah, I got no life. And I'm like, yeah, sounds like a great life to me.
Yeah, I got millions in the bank, and I go to games every night.
You live downtown, take the subway, or whatever it may be.
A place in Florida too?
And
you doing all right, John?
So he said something that made me think. that I never thought about before. And maybe it's, maybe I was wrong. And I don't think he was saying it in seriousness, although maybe he was.
Mm-hmm.
He goes, well, I can't get into the Hall of Fame, so I figured I might as well come out to the games. And I was like, LOL, whatever. And then we joke. And I told you, I talked to him the other night after the Giants game.
Yeah, he told me.
I said, he wants, I was like, dude, come in, hang with us for a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so we'll talk some, you know.
I love Franco.
He's like, what, are the Mets getting any pitching? We'll talk to Franco, get him in soon. He's great. I think you can make a case for John Franco to be a Hall of Famer. Now, I never thought that while watching him.
Yeah.
But remember, it was a, and by the way, I heard the morning show. I had this ready to go anyway off of last night, but I heard the morning show playing a clip of Beningo, who was bitching about Billy Wagner getting in and saying.
He was complaining?
Yes. Well,
oh,
I mean, it's Joe. Yeah,
come
he's complaining.
On, Joe.
He doesn't want Vlad. He wants Pete back. And he doesn't want Wagner in the Hall of Fame. He wants Franco in the Hall of Fame. But I do think it's an interesting thing to bring up. At the time where I was watching Franco, remember, relievers weren't as big of a deal as it seems like they are now. And
well, I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah,
Rich Gossage, Lee Smith, Bruce Sutter,
well,
Dave Righetti, are you kidding me?
As far as getting the Hall of Fame, like Hoffman wasn't in. Remember, it took Lee Smith a long time. So I don't even think Hoffman's that great. Now he has 600-something saves, so he's obviously got to be in, right?
I was never a big Hoffman guy.
Me neither.
I really wasn't.
Okay, so he wasn't dominant the way that you would expect. Like Wagner, to me, was dominant. But Franco's got more saves than Billy Wagner. Lee Smith is ERA. Franco's got a better ERA than Lee Smith. I mean, Johnny, at the very least, BT, is on par with Lee Smith. He wasn't as dominant as Wagner. You know Franco's career ERA?
I'm looking at it, and I got to tell you, I'm surprised by it.
Me too.
I did not think it was that low.
2.89.
I would have guessed, you know, 3.26. That's a lot lower than I thought.
Trevor Hoffman, and I looked this up just a little bit before. I think Hoffman was, Hoffman 2.87.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, Hoffman has the 600 saves.
And Johnny's got about 450, right?
Four,
where is he at?
424. So he's got more saves than Wagner, and he's got a better ERA, similar ERA to Hoffman.
Yep.
Better ERA than Lee Smith. I mean, I think you could actually make a case. Now, again, I know it may sound nuts, and my friends are like, he played for 21 years. To have that ERA as a closer for 21 years, by the way, when maybe he got robbed of some saves because back then in the 80s and early 90s, pitchers were going deeper in a game.
True.
I never really gave him much thought. I think now with Wagner in, with Hoffman in, certainly with Lee Smith, who's got in, you know, a while ago, I do think you could make a legitimate case for Johnny Franco being an All-Star, a Hall of Famer.
What are his comps? I'm just out of curiosity. Then I'll give you my opinion on that. By the way, postseason ERA 1.88, just to, you know, further validate. Yeah,
there
okay.
You go.
Let's see.
I pitched in a World Series, at least one. Was he with the Reds in? No, he was not.
He only got 4.6% of the votes. Yikes, that's low.
Yeah, well, maybe he gets one of those veterans.
Maybe. That would surprise me.
Lee Smith had a 3.03 ERA and 478 saves.
Mm, and played on a lot of bad Cub teams, too. Remember the...
It was never dominant, like, at least
I thought
mind.
Lee was good. I thought Lee was more dominant at his apex than John.
And
I never looked at John as dominant. That's the problem.
You have Franco's numbers off?
I do.
Let me
give you the similarity scores, because this will get... So the names most closely related to him... And if you know Baseball Reference, you know similarity scores, you know what I mean, what I'm saying here. If not, just go look it up. It'll take forever to explain. Lee Smith, Sparky Lyle, Jeff Reardon, Kent Tekulve, K-Rod, Raleigh Fingers. All right, Tug McGraw, Jesse Orosco. My first reaction is John Franco was not a Hall of Famer.
Agreed.
It's my first reaction.
Me too.
I also didn't think he had a sub-3 ERA. That did surprise me a bit. And I will admit, I'm a little biased. What was his best pitch? The slider, the changeup? It was a secondary pitch, not a fastball. I think it was a changeup. Right?
Kind of a little stingy, too.
It would kind of bend, like almost toward the ankles. It was had a little screwball element. You're right. And when I look at a pitcher like that, maybe it's unfair to me, but as a closer...
Right, because he wasn't a power guy.
I want some guess.
Yeah,
that's why Hoffman, Hoffman's best pitch was a changeup, too. When I had a guy coming out of the bullpen, and there's two on, two out, last inning, eighth inning, high leverage, whatever it is, I want to know that I got a guy who's going to throw three fastballs or like Mo, three cutters, he's going to break a bat or you're not touching it. And John Franco was not that. I never thought he was a Hall of Famer. Close.
Right, but now with others getting in, then you could also argue.
I would be more open to him getting a lot more consideration.
Right?
I would be.
Because initially, I honestly thought like maybe he was just joking around. And then I was like, I gave it some thought. I'm looked up some of the numbers. Like, hey.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting.
If you have the ERA that's on par with some guys who are in or better than that, and you have the total amount of saves that are on par or better, he's got more saves than Wagner. Wagner was more dominant, so I always skewed dominant.
Me too.
But Lee Smith, Hoffman, I mean, Johnny was just as good.
The other thing, too, because, you know, Franco, is, as we know, was not a career Met.
Yes.
I was going to say, obviously, with Cincinnati. And I didn't even realize, I figured he made one or two. You know, he made three All-Star teams with the Reds. Three.
That's what I'm saying.
So three with the Reds.
Before he got here.
With the Reds.
Yeah.
Now, listen, we do baseball cards, and that was right in my wheelhouse. I'm watching the Yanks and the Mets every night. I did not know, I did not realize he made three All-Star teams with the Reds. Let's just say he was a career Met, and it came up Tidewater, comes to the Mets in the 84.
And it's three of those All-Star games with the Mets.
Yeah, and now it's four with the Mets. Is my perception a little slanted? Quite frankly, it probably would be, because for me, especially before like cable and MLB Network, what you did in other cities back then, it was more obscurity. Again, still first Last glance, one. No, but...
You have him up more, right there?
Yeah, Frank,
did he ever lead the league in saves? And if he did, how many times?
He led the league in saves three times, which is not something I would have guessed either. I would have thought maybe once.
I think Lee Smith did it four. Franco should be in. If Lee Smith's going to be in, I think you can make a very good case for Johnny Franco to be in. Brandon Tierney, Sal Licata back on the fan. Couple things, BT. Number one, your guy Phil came by this morning, took care of that leak situation that we had.
I was going to ask you about that. Yeah. Did he take care of you, my guy Phil?
Yes, he did. He stopped by 7:30 sharp this morning. Yeah, I was like, you got to come. I got to get out of the house here. And like there was really, so we found out it was a jacuzzi that we're not even using in the bathroom upstairs that was the problem. So when it was being cleaned or whatever, the water was on, and that's, I guess, what was leaking through the freaking ceiling, through the light fixture.
Okay.
But it was only for a little while. They shut it off, so Phil just made sure that the power's out, that jacuzzi is, I can't wait to get it the hell out of there, as a matter of fact. But that was it, so Phil did a good job. The one thing is, he comes in, I show him upstairs, whatever, and then he's going back out to get whatever tools he needed to shut something down.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife goes, oh, are you guys going to be here coming in and out a while? They're like, no, it's going to be quick. She goes, oh, just because we had the house cleaned yesterday and the shoes, we don't want to. I'm like, no, they're all right. And he's like, no, you're right. We should have known better, but.
I got to be honest with you. I'm with Team Wife on this one.
I tell
people take your shoes off.
I know, but like I'm like, they're here doing us a favor. It's
so
gonna
what?
Be quick. I get it.
You're doing us a big favor. I very much appreciate it.
Phil was like, oh no problem. Don't worry about it.
They usually have those little slip-on footsie things that they have, like those little fabric things.
It just shows you how different. Like it didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
You know why? I don't care.
Yeah.
Get it done. I'll sweep up a little dirt. Fix the damn leak. I don't want any problems here. Just do what you got to do. Get out of my hair so I can go to work.
Yeah, he's a big sports fan too, Phil.
Very nice guy, so we appreciate that. The
Good
other
job,
thing
Phil.
Is, so I can promote the guest that we're having tomorrow. It just, remember, subject to change.
Mm-hmm.
Me and Meningo out on Amazing Day, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. tomorrow. Clay Holmes.
Okay.
I think it's a fascinating conversation.
That'll be a good conversation.
Yankee angle, Met angle, reliever starter. Brandon Nimmo.
Okay.
Carlos Mendoza.
Ah, your boy Mendy. You got to get him in studio for us.
I'm going to tell him, hey.
Booney's stepping up. You got to step up.
Booney's coming in Tuesday to play the card game.
Let's go.
Anyway, so Mendy and then Daryl Strawberry.
That's a good list right there. That's you and Joe?
Yeah.
That's good.
Strong list, right?
That's a very strong list.
Subject to change, but I'm looking forward to
Could
that.
Could you do me a favor and ask Brandon Nimmo if he likes batting 7th, 8th, or 9th in a lineup more?
He's going to be hitting 4th. He's going to be hitting 4th.
No, you turned on Nimmo now?
Yeah, I've been turned on Nimmo since he got signed to that stupid deal. I'm not a Nimmo guy.
This guy's going to lose his mind when Pete signs elsewhere. You know that.
I hope it happens tomorrow at Amazing Day.
No, I hope it happens here on the air.
I got to be here for it.
You see his tweets?
Yeah, no, he loves Pete.
You
got to let it go. When I do this, like when we did the open today, I'm talking to you, Hoff. Let it go. It's over. BT, sing the song from Frozen. You love
it. Let it go.
Let it go. Let it go, Hoff. It's over.
Don't hold me back anymore.
Shut up, both of you. It's not just about my love for Pete. It's also the fact that they need a bat.
Uh-huh.
I mean,
he's
the
not
best,
wrong with that.
He's the best hitter on the market right now, besides Bregman, I guess.
Hoff.
Vladdy.
Oh, you got to stop with that nonsense.
Vladdy. I whispered Soto here. Come on. I whispered Soto across.
I got to be honest. I was listening to Evan Atik yesterday. I had to go over to St. John's to do the TV show. So I'm walking to my car. I put the car on, put the station on, and they were talking about the Vlad and the Pete, the intensified conversations. Like, you know,
what'd
like
they
we're
say?
Doing. I'll tell you, Evan, I like his take, and I think this is something that you should probably adopt at some point here. Forget about 26. Like, Vladdy, I got it. We're almost approaching 2025. You guys are going to be down in Port St. Lucie in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Who's hitting behind Soto?
And what was his? What was their answer?
Their answer is they want somebody.
So Pete?
Pete or somebody else.
Okay.
But right now it's very incomplete. I agree.
When I say, Vladdy, who's to say that that's 2026?
I think that deep down you think it's 2026 more than 2025.
That's like the last resort. My pathway is that he does not get extended by the Blue Jays. Obviously, that's like domino number one. But once that happens, now it's fair game for everybody. And I believe that they won't get an extension before spring training, which means I believe Toronto is going to be willing to trade him. And to your point, BT, you said before you think his best value is going to be now because you'd be selling him for a full season to somebody.
Rather than deadline.
Much like the Padres did with the Yankees a year ago.
Yep.
So if Vlad's going to be on the block and get traded, and the Mets were already inquiring, now I don't know about what Toronto wants. That is where I tap out. Like, I know what the Mets have, or at least I know enough of what the Mets have. I don't know if that's a match with the Blue Jays or not.
And they want Vientos.
I was just going to say I'm not giving up Vientos.
Click.
Yeah. Click.
You might not get Vladdy.
Then the theme is click 2026.
Okay.
Click. See you in 2026.
Okay, but what about 2025? Okay, we get back to this.
Then they have to figure that out.
But there's not many answers that are available.
I know, but you're starting to go down. Like, there's still many ways to get to that step. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's
a couple.
I believe that right now there is still a very good chance Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is the first baseman for the New York Mets on opening day.
That would surprise me. It wouldn't stun me because I know that you guys have already engaged with them. So you want him. You're going to put together a good package. I get that. But
the odds are against that, I know, but I believe it still could happen.
I got you. I think there's a better chance that they roll the dice, which is going to be deemed cavalier. Like, wait a second, you're going to go into a season, he didn't agree to a contract, deadline's over, he's not going to do it during the season, you're going to run the risk of losing him for a compensatory pick over next offseason. I think that they, more than most teams, might be, because they're in a unique position where nobody's running to play for them, and they might just, maybe one of their thoughts is, hey, we'll up the ante, we'll give more money in the offseason, and if he has a good year here with Pete and with Santander and the already existing two or three pretty decent bats already have, plus Vlad, and they win 90 games or 89 games in their wild card team, maybe he's a little more likely to re-sign because he had fun and he enjoyed it and could see a winning environment.